What do you envision your life will be like once you retire? And keep in mind that it's likely to be a long period of time, decades for many people. And you're coming into this new phase of life with many hopes for the future, but also some concerns. When I ask my clients about their concerns, one topic above all tops the list: well-being. They're talking about their physical health, but they're also mentioning their psychological well-being. And there's another topic of concern that people always often raise as well, and that's, what will life be like after this honeymoon period I keep hearing about is over? Will I get stuck? No one wants to get stuck. I'm Joe Casey, and this is the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. Our guest today is Dr. Corey Keyes, author of the new book, Languishing: How to Feel Alive Again in a World That Wears Us Down. Between flourishing and depression, there's a middle ground called languishing. If you're languishing, you're more likely to feel out of control of your life, uncertain about what you want from the future, and paralyzed when faced with decisions. If it's left unchecked, languishing not only impedes day-to-day life, but it can be a gateway to serious mental illness and even early mortality. But there are pathways to get unstuck by engaging in activities that bring you joy and fulfillment, foster social connection, and cultivate a sense of purpose and meaning in life. Corey Keyes is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia, where he held the Winship Distinguished Research Professorship. He was a member of the prestigious MacArthur Foundation Research Network on Successful Aging. His pioneering research introduced the concepts of social well-being, flourishing, languishing, the two continua model of mental health and illness, and his work is being used to prevent mental illness via the promotion of positive, flourishing mental health. Thank you for joining us today.
It's great to be here.
So you coined the term languishing. Can you tell us what it is and what does it feel like?
But languishing, there is a formal diagnosis. In the book, I give you the 14 questions, a questionnaire that I developed. And to languish, you have to be deficient in at least 7 out of the 14 signs of flourishing. Now, at least one of those signs has to come from what I call the emotional well-being category, which is you don't feel either happy, satisfied, or interested in life very often. But then the rest, interestingly, you have to be deficient in 6 or more of what I call the functioning well. And there's degrees of languishing. It can be mild, moderate, or severe. And of course, what you're missing is things like, my life has no direction and meaning. I don't have a sense of belonging to a community. I don't feel like I'm contributing anything of value to the world around me. I don't like most parts of my personality. I'm not confident anymore to think and express my ideas and opinions. I'm not being challenged to grow and become a better person. Those are just some of the questions that where people might be deficient. Each case of languishing is slightly different because you don't have to have all of the signs and symptoms. You just have to meet 7 out of the 14. So languishing is a lot more than what feeling meh or blah. It's the absence of some really important things that make our life meaningful. And people describe it as feeling like they're dying or dead inside. Or there's definitely a sense of emptiness or numbness because emotionally you don't feel much of anything, good or bad. So this is not depression. It's not at all close to depression because languishing is the absence of the good stuff. It can go along, right? It can go along with depression and make depression worse, but it's a sense that you're feeling stuck, stagnant, empty, dead inside.
How about flourishing?
Well, again, there's a formal diagnosis and you have to have at least 7 out of the 14 signs every day or almost every day in the past month or past 2 weeks. And again, one of them has to come from the feeling good, right? Either you feel happy, satisfied, or interested in life almost every day. And then, right, you're also almost every day, your life has direction and meaning, you're contributing, you're growing, you feel good at managing the responsibilities of your life. You can make sense of what's going on in, in the world around you. You have a sense of belonging, and you might even have warm, trusting relations almost every day. So to flourish is it's about feeling good about a life where you're functioning well.
So people who are planning for retirement certainly want to flourish, but many of them are fearful and uncertain about the future, and that may be fearful of, even though they may not use the word yet, languishing. The question on the mind of everyone who's listening right now is, how do you go from languishing to flourishing? If only there were some vitamins you could take.
Yes. Well, we will. Yes. Interesting. You brought up those vitamins. We can talk more about that. But the good news is that flourishing is at its peak throughout the lifespan, during what most of us would consider at least the first decade of retirement. So roughly between 60 to 74, it is at its peak. And before you retire, and throughout your adult working phase, it starts up pretty low in its early to late 20s, but it steadily increases so that as you get settled into your career and become senior and established, you tend to, on average, leave your career on a high note. You're flourishing, but it gets better. And that's that point I want to make, that it's the first decade, at least, of retirement. People are doing really well on average. It's the problems that happen come with, if we live long enough, and by that I mean roughly past the age of 75 plus, and more of us are, we see a downturn in flourishing and an increase in languishing, and that towards the end of life.
And so that makes me more curious than ever about these vitamins. So tell me about the five things people can do that really promote flourishing.
Well, the five vitamins come from a study, and I talk about it in the book. I ended up reviewing it for publication, and I just fell in love with this particular study. And it was a part of her graduate dissertation. Her name was Lana Catalino. And every Tuesday, and by the way, it was longitudinal, which is good because we can begin to talk about cause and effect. So every Tuesday, she would call up the adults in her study and ask them what they had done on that Monday, the day before. And she had measured and knew that whether they were flourishing, whether they were languishing and free of depression, or whether they had met the criteria for depression. And then she asked them about their activities. And five of the activities stood out among people who were flourishing, who did more of the following. They engaged in more forms of helping behavior. It might be volunteering, helping people, or even living your purpose. We can get back to that. That's one category of a vitamin. Go out there and help someone or help something in the world and make it better. Second vitamin, and that's something that flourishers did more of, was that they connected more. What they were doing was prioritizing warm, trusting relationships, relationships where they had a sense of belonging, where they were part of a community, and relationships where they mattered. And by that, I meant they were needed, right? And there's a lot of talk now out there on this concept of mattering. And in my measurement of flourishing, the sense of contributing worth and value to the world is baked into flourishing. So the second thing they did more of was connect around warmth, trust, belonging, and mattering. The third was they were very active in learning something new and prioritizing personal growth. And I tend to think of this passion for learning. And again, this was not something you learned because you had to or it was work-related. It could be work-related, of course. But when people have to learn and do it, much like many of my former college students, you would think college students are the happiest because they're always learning something new, but they have to. So they don't get the joy out of that learning and growth. But I found it interesting. That's sort of like our version of photosynthesis. What plants do with the sun, human beings come alive when they're engaged in some form of learning and growth. So that was the third category. The fourth was what I call transcending. And by that, I mean spirituality and religion. People were engaged. Now, again, you don't have to be religious or even spiritual to benefit from this lesson. But what people were doing was engaging in some form of ritual or practice on a regular basis that had what we would consider a spiritual component. And for me, that's always been yoga. Now, again, you can do yoga and just do the poses and not get involved in all the spirituality. But I'm here to tell you that research shows you will get a lot more bang for your buck if you don't just go and do the poses, but you also study some facets of the yogic ethical philosophy, because people are much more likely to flourish when they engage in a kind of spirituality where they're immersing themselves not in just in practices, but the philosophy behind it. And last but not least, flourishers played a lot more and they engaged in a lot more active leisure, not the passive kind. Active leisure. They weren't sitting in their couch or in a chair consuming their leisure. They were getting out there and making things happen and doing things. But I'll end here. Here's the good news. If you were languishing or depressed and you did more of one of those five vitamins that Monday, right, you were much more likely to have a much better day than people who did nothing. And over time, if you continue to do more of those five vitamins, you're languishing in depression, you are moving away from those two things and towards flourishing. Now, it doesn't happen overnight, it doesn't happen in a month, but it's a slow, steady progress. And if you're flourishing and you do nothing, you have this as bad a day as people who are depressed or languishing who do none of those five things. So, those vitamins are a real antidote for not only languishing, but if you have depression as well.
And it sounds like the consistency is important.
Consistency, and I want to emphasize, you do not have to do all five of those every day. Pick one and do more of it that day. Because the more a person did of that one specific vitamin, the better off they were at the end of the day. They had a much better day. And these better days begin to pile up and create, right, this momentum towards flourishing. That I think is good news is you end up doing more than one vitamin often purely because it's part of the DNA. Like imagine going out and doing leisure. Sometimes we do it alone. Sometimes we do it with our best friends, so you're connecting around warm, trusting relationships. You might do it with a group of people. You have your hiking group or community. So you're playing a little bit and you're socializing. A lot of these things bleed together.
Great points. You have a great chapter on purpose in your book, and I'm going to quote you for a minute. You write that purpose is not a luxury good. And you also note that having a purpose is different than living a life of purpose. How can people create the authentic purpose that you write about?
Well, the point I'm trying to make there is that a purpose is meant to be acted upon. I don't think researchers do enough of work around this to disentangle the sense that you have, your life has purpose, but how much do you live it? Because I think the real benefits aren't just having a sense of purpose, but it's going out maybe on a weekly basis or a couple times each month and living it. And almost anyone who has a purpose.
Think about how long you've been saving for your retirement. Is it time to start thinking about how you'll invest your time in that retirement? Consider joining our small group coaching program, Design Your New Life in Retirement. It's based on Dave Evans and Bill Burnett's work, Designing Your Life, which leverages the principles of design thinking to help you create your future. It can be very helpful to do it with others who are working on the same thing. Our next program starts April 26th. It meets every other week for 12 weeks with one-on-one sessions at the beginning and at the conclusion. Don't just drift into your future. Take some time to design it. You'll find a link in the show notes to the details you'll need to learn more about the program, how to register, the cost, the dates, times, etc. And if you have any questions, you can schedule a call by clicking on retirementwisdom.com, upper right-hand corner, or send me an email, joec@retirementwisdom.com.
The reason I talked a lot about purpose in that chapter on helping is because that is the nature of a purpose. I have two very simple questions I ask my readers. Do you want to help someone or something and focus, right, and make the world a better place through your activity? Yes or no? If you say no to that, you don't have the time or interest, don't sweat this notion. Don't even bother with the purpose, because the purpose is built on trying to help someone or something in the world improve it or leave it in better shape than what you found it. And then it's not enough just to say, yes, I want to do that, but do you have the resources, the talent, the skill, the time? And can you get to the place where you need to do your purpose? Is transportation, for instance, readily available? Can you drive or can you hitch a ride? There's all kinds of practical things that you'll need to think about. And that's why I also recommend that when you think about helping, volunteering, or living your purpose, think small. Small is big. By that, I think we sometimes see so many tragic things on the news, and we want to get right in there and solve the problem in the Middle East or refugees. Or there's nothing wrong with that, but my chances are your purpose doesn't have to be that enormous. It could be picking something very local and in your community so that you can actually do more of what and actually do some face-to-face work. And you said consistency earlier. It's true. The research shows very clearly keeping up the habit of helping and then living your purpose is very important. And that's why I say small is big, because if you keep local and focus on something that's nearby, that something or someone that needs help, you're much more likely to do it more consistently.
An enormous purpose can be overwhelming, and it really can be paralyzing to begin. Where do you begin? Where do you start? You get moving.
Yeah. How do you get your arms around such an enormous problem? None of us. I don't think even Mother Teresa could actually do all that she needed to do, and probably felt sometimes like she couldn't do. I think maybe, I don't know her story personally, but I imagine she got her arms around some of the problems, not all of them. So she was just as human as we are.
But a good example of living the purpose, acting on it, and consistency.
Yes.
So it's clear in reading your book that you don't think people stop growing once we retire. Tell us about the external and internal paths of personal growth.
Yeah. This external, internal path was something that started to emerge after I had been teaching my seminar on happiness for over a decade. And what I found was that there is this external path that I think our culture readily embraces and encourages all of us to do, right? Which is to acquire the skills and knowledge and degrees, if you will, in terms of education, to get good at something in the marketplace. And that requires a lot of investment. The more education, usually the better off you are in terms of being able to launch yourself into some kind of profession where people, you can make a good living at being good at something. Nothing wrong with that. Now, the external path is based on competition. Again, I'm not against competition, and I think it can sometimes bring out the best in us. It, of course, can sometimes bring out the worst of us. But what we're focused on this external path and is trying to get better and be better than others at what you're doing. And there's a great satisfaction in and rewards that come along with that kind of external path. You gain social status, economic resources, wonderful reputation among your colleagues or around the world. All kinds of good things can come to you that would make you flourish. That's the path I think we're so used to it. That's a muscle we can flex without thinking about it. It's the internal path that I want people to focus a little more on. Prioritize it a little more when you're practicing the vitamins. You can practice all five vitamins through the external path. And I encourage you to sometimes go out there, have a competition around who can raise the most money for a cause if you're out there trying to do a help, right? So you could do any of those vitamins externally and great and grow and feel good. But the internal path has a very different logic. It's where you go, you introspect and you go inside of yourself and you look at what places and ways in which you need to improve to become a better human being. We sometimes call this character. You can call it what you want, but I think the internal path is about addressing your vulnerabilities, sometimes your weaknesses, the things that make you do things that you might regret, or where you might do things that aren't what we would call kind or generous. Those are the things where it's about becoming a better person for other people, is the way I would describe the internal path. The external path is about being better than other people at something. The internal path is about becoming a better kind of person so that you're better for the world and other people. Kinder, more generous, more forgiving, more grateful, right? All of those qualities also bring us closer to flourishing. And I think that's a path at any age, even late into life, we can all continue to work on our character and become a better human being, a kinder, gentler, more generous version of ourselves.
You mentioned happiness, and you write in the book about the difference between happiness and flourishing. Tell us more.
Yes, I use a phrase in there that happiness, don't be fooled by it. It is not your North Star. It's not actually. I actually took my questionnaire and had college students think deeply about each question and then evaluate how important on a scale from 0 to 10, each of those things were to them personally and for their lives. And the 3 feeling good questions were rated as the most important things in their lives. The 6 questions about psychological well-being, warm trust, like things like purpose in life, self-acceptance, personal growth, autonomy, that came in a distant second to the feeling good stuff. And the 5 questions about social well-being, do you have a sense of belonging? Are you making contributions? Can you make sense of the world and around you? Do you believe that people are basically good? Can you trust, and so forth? They came in dead last place as the least important aspects of what they thought were important to their lives. And I suspect my students are simply revealing in that particular study that I did what they have been socialized by all the adults around them in our culture to prioritize. First, we want to feel good and happy. And only then, maybe I want to prioritize functioning well. But here's the problem. 22% of college students are flourishing when it comes to happiness. They're happy almost every day or every day, but they're languishing according to the criteria of functioning well. And here's the kicker. They have 3 times the rate of mental illness as the young college students who are flourishing, where they feel good about a life in which they're functioning well on at least 6 out of the 11 facets of functioning well. If you're thinking happiness is the gold standard, it is not. When it's not tethered to a life where you have purpose, belonging, contribution, acceptance of yourself and others, and growth and all the other thing. It's a kind of happiness that's much like some of our dietary habits in this world. We eat things that make us feel good, but aren't filled with sustenance. No nutritional value. I call it like the Cheeto diet. Like having Cheetos and Big Macs and fast food, it will make you happy, but too much of it, as we learned from, I forget what that documentary was, if you ate Big Macs every day, it was not healthy for you. And I think that's what happiness is like when it's not tethered to functioning well.
And speaking of being tethered, one concept that caught my attention in your book is this idea of base camp. And you mentioned yoga before. Tell me about the importance of having a base camp. How does that work? And what should people know?
Yeah, this is an expression I got from hanging around friends who were deeply involved in Buddhism and in my yoga community and teachings. And so it has a lot to do with spiritual pursuits. And the first thing they prioritize, these spiritual pursuits, is quieting the mind, becoming the owner of your own mind, controlling what you pay attention to, and also being very aware of your intentions. And that's what the poses are in yoga are designed for, to create a calm, quiet, stable mind and body so that you can then begin to study the ethical lessons involved in each of these traditions. Because it's all of them are about creating base camps so that you can become the kind of person others will honor, respect, trust, right? Somebody with integrity. That's the summit. Becoming and being a person with integrity. You don't want to stay at the base camp, or there's no point in having a quiet mind if you're not going to use it to focus on what at least these spiritual traditions consider very important. It's the ethical pieces. In Buddhism, it's the Eightfold Path. Yoga has its own version. So all that meditation we're doing just to relieve stress is shortchanging us, in my opinion. Yes, it's good for mitigating stress. But I think we're missing something when we decontextualize all of these traditions from their origins, which is deeply rooted in what religions were also deeply rooted in, which is becoming a better human being, a person with integrity.
So if you were to summarize the main messages you want people to take away from your new book, what would you say?
One is, I agree that there is a growing crisis around mental illness in the world. And I think the fact that we continue to hear about the growing crisis, that it's getting worse, not better, suggests to me that we shouldn't do more of the same, which is thinking that we can treat our way out of the problems, poor mental health. Now, I'm not against treatment. I suffer from my own mental illnesses, and treatment has been useful, but it only gets me so far. And I'm here to tell you that mental health is so much more than the absence of mental illness. And when you're flourishing or prioritize flourishing, even if you've had mental illness, as you move closer and closer to flourishing, the studies show, and I live this myself, I stay in recovery far longer. I function so much better with my mental illness because it recedes into the background. So even if you've had mental illness and you've gone through treatment, it's not enough, in my opinion, because most treatment studies show leave people languishing. And depending on how severe your languishing is, the risk of relapse, right? The mental illness will come back. And it's much more likely the worse your languishing is. So this stuff is very important, even if you have mental illness. But the last thing I'll say is my book offers, I think, another approach to dealing with the crisis, the growing crisis of mental illness, which is we could prevent more, a lot more depression and anxiety, even PTSD in this world, if we dealt with people long before they broke down, right? That is, deal with the problem of languishing in the world and promote good mental health. Because people who are flourishing have the lowest risk of all those things I listed in the 13 reasons to take this serious, right? Not the least of which is they're flourishing at all ages throughout adulthood, men and women. Premature mortality is dramatically lower. Mental illnesses, the risk of developing or coming back, dramatically lower. Suicidality, dramatically lower. Productivity, dramatically higher. I could go on. So I once was asked, well, if there's so much languishing in the world, doesn't it suggest people need to toughen up? Here was my response. You mentally healthy people are tough. They have the strength and the resilience to deal with a lot of adversity in life and not be set back. It's a protective factor is what we call it. So we could be reducing, I'm not saying all mental illness, but we could reduce a lot more of it if we tried to prevent it by promoting good mental health and trying to keep people there longer.
And the headline for me is the activities that you talk about that really promote those protective benefits.
Yes, those five things that you do not need to go buy. You don't have to purchase it from any expert. If you have the money and you want a life coach, go. I say that's a great use of it. But create a community. You could even do these with your friends and your family. Create a community where each day you devote one of the 5 days of the week, maybe not the weekend, you can leave it, but to one of those five vitamins.
Great idea. Corey, thank you so much for taking the time. Great to speak with you after reading the book. Thoroughly enjoyed it. A lot of important issues and advice and practical takeaways embedded in it based on all the research that you've done. So thank you for sharing it with us today.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate the opportunity.
Let's move over to our takeaway segment to talk about what actions you can take following today's conversation with Corey Keyes. Number one, take your vitamins. Yes, I know you saw that one coming. But I think it's the heart of the book and his conversation today. You really want to take action if you want to flourish. No one wants to be stuck, but if you want to get unstuck, move to these actions and do them regularly. They're worth repeating so that you have clarity on what they are, and they're covered in detail in the book. The first is follow your curiosity to learn something new. Curiosity is very powerful, so follow yours, and it takes you to things that you want to try. Next is building warm and trusting relationships, fostering belonging and connectivity, and then explore and engage in spiritual practices. The next is have and live your purpose. And I really take note of his distinction between having a purpose and living a purpose. I think that was very insightful on his part to share that with us. And finally, play. As he writes, make time to enjoy the process, not just the outcome. So making time for fun. Those five activities really are the keys to flourishing. So put them on your list and take your vitamins. Number two, how's your leisure? His distinction between active and passive leisure is worth taking a step back. What's the ratio for you? How can you engage in more active leisure rather than passive leisure? I follow a lot of sports, and some might think that's passive. To which I say, you may not have ever seen me watch some of the games of my favorite teams, but his point is a good one. Active leisure is definitely going to give you more benefit and bring you closer to flourishing than passive leisure. Number three, what's your base camp? He talked about yoga really as his. Is it for you? What's that thing, that activity, that practice that grounds you and brings you to center? Very valuable thing to have as you move into the next phase of life. What's your base camp? Thanks for listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. Our mission is to help you retire smarter by sharing information on non-financial side of retirement life and helping you create the one that you want. You can browse all of our episodes at our website, retirementwisdom.com. And while you're there, check out our best books on retirement. It's a library with short summaries of things that can help you create the retirement that you want and the one you've earned.